You're listening to The Weather Junkies.
Oh, boy.
Large wedge tornado coming up into Tuscaloosa.
A winter storm warning is in effect for our area.
We can expect at least another 2 to 4 inches overnight. Then that snows.
The National Weather Service in Huntsville has issued a tornado warning for northwestern Madison.
14 to 22 inches of snow!
You're there, Dakota, right?
Yeah.
Technology never ceases to let us down.
What, wait, was the intro, did the intro not go?
The intro played, but it was also playing with some podcasts of yours along with it.
Oh, dear. I apologize.
A little bit of a technical issue at the board.
We have reached DEFCON 5 here. okay, well. Yeah, sorry about that. You know, it's weird. When I play the intro, I can't actually hear it, and I can't hear any of the audio that's playing on my Mac. So apparently I was accidentally playing something else in the background. My apologies about that. Thanks for bearing with us, though. I'm in Colorado right now, as always, in Fort Collins. And, you know, over the weekend we had some pretty dreary weather. The weather gods must have been listening to the podcast, because I was bragging about how wonderful Colorado weather was, and it rained all weekend, pretty dismal. One day, I don't think we got out of the 40s, so it was cold and rainy and dreary. So now we know what you guys were dealing with the past week or so in the East Coast. But now it's nice outside, and I won't jinx it, won't talk about it too much, because I want that weather to continue. How's the weather out there?
It's going to be great tomorrow, and we are just barely missing the brunt of a nor'easter out over the ocean this weekend, which is good. I don't want a driving rainstorm on a weekend in May, but we are mostly missing that, and then unfortunately it looks like a big upper-level low just parks over us next week. So the dry, sunny weather is being rationed. Tomorrow is about it in the next 7 days. It does not look pleasant at all next week, but it's nice out now. It's enjoyable. The windows are open. It's the best time of the year.
Nice, nice. Glad to hear that. I know you guys were really reeling from that those clouds that we call them. I saw the Capitol Weather Gang tweet out, the sun is out. That's the sun. I guess it was so unrecognizable to them. But let's get into our tweets this week. And my first tweet this week is kind of a rant I have, so bear with me here. The tweet is from James Hyde. You can follow him at WXMedler. And his tweet says, Tim Marshall is in it. What a baller, quote unquote. He was quoting the Base Hunters. And they had a video of a research storm chaser, and they were deploying a pod to collect data from the tornado. This was the big tornado that happened in outside of Sulphur, Oklahoma. And we actually know someone who is in the group, Jake DeFlitch, good friend of ours, who was on the show a few weeks ago. And, oh my gosh, they got so close to this thing that they were practically, they were in the very edges of this huge tornado. I have a little bit of issue with this. There's always issues with getting too close to tornadoes, storm chasers getting too close, whether you're amateur or professional or whatever. But to me, when it comes to getting research or getting data for research and for the science, I think they should be held to a higher standard. And there's always some risk with this kind of research, but the risk I think they put themselves in was not worth it. I think they were in the area where if the tornado had the unexpected kind of wobble or jog, they would have been in a really, really bad situation. I don't want to discredit them at all, because they're very smart people. They obviously know what they're doing, and they put themselves in that situation for a reason to get data. And I heard the data is awesome, but I don't know. I don't think it's worth it to get that close. And I would like to think at some point, very, very soon, we'd have technology where we wouldn't have to put people in that kind of risk to collect that kind of data. Okay, end rant. Tyler, what are your thoughts?
Well, we had someone on the show talking about drones a couple of weeks ago, so yeah. I definitely think that drones are the future of a lot of things. One thing may be data gathering. Yeah. I just glanced at the video here, and was this the, yeah, sulfur. Okay, there are a lot of dramatic videos that came out of that tornado. I saw one on NBC Connecticut from Matt Mihalik, a Penn State grad. He had his little name credit on the video, and I was like, wow, look at that. I know who that is. I mean, in terms of the closeness to the tornado, I mean, I'm no professional storm chaser, but
yeah,
it does seem like a lot of these people get very close. I think the only example that you need is the one where the professional storm chasers, the best in the business, were killed in a tornado. So there is really no safe way to do any of this.
Yeah, I agree. But
so, I mean, it's a risk. I mean, when the best person in the field dies, I mean, anyone is susceptible to that. I'm obviously referencing Tim and the people he was working with. Was that about a year or two ago?
Yeah, I think it was 2 years ago. It was the El Reno one, the El Reno tornado, I believe.
Yes, the El Reno tornado.
Yeah.
So I will take the next tweet, and our second tweet of the night is titled El Nino Humor, and this tweet is from Eric Holthouse. He says, so much for El Nino. California statewide snowpack is down to just 35% of normal today after a very warm spring. Yikes. And the map that he attached to the tweet shows different regions of California and the snow water equivalents dated for May 17th, and the percent of normal for the date is 33% in Northern California, as low as 26% down in the Southern Sierra, which is in the central portion of California. So the point of the tweet is that a lot of people thought El Nino would help with the extreme drought in California, deliver a lot of rain, deliver snow in the mountains. And it doesn't appear that that panned out. One way to measure that is the snowpack, and the snowpack is much below average for the date. So, very interesting. One of the strongest El Niños ever recorded, and it didn't play out as we thought in every area. Obviously, a lot of places were warm, including the Northeast in particular, and that was expected long before the El Niño peaked. But in California, not quite as much precipitation as we thought would have occurred in the El Nino. So a bit of a disappointment for the drought relief there in California. And we do have another tweet. Our third tweet of the night is West Coast Viz. We have shown tweets from Zach Labe in the past. He is at UC Irvine. He is formerly of Cornell University with a atmospheric science degree, and his picture that he tweeted is a visible satellite picture from GOES West, and he says the atmosphere is such a work of abstract art. Visible satellite images never cease to amaze me, especially with fog and things that you don't typically think you would see on a satellite. So things other than clouds. You can often see smoke from wildfires. You can see snow, freshly fallen snow, all sorts of things. So, I mean, you could basically pull any visible satellite image from the internet, and it would be amazing. So just another example there from Zach on Twitter.
Yeah, he's always bringing us awesome imagery, and I feel like we feature him every other episode. Some great stuff there. Check out that tweet if you can from Zach Laib. So we're going to try to bring on our guest now, Matt Bolton. Matt, let's just check. Can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Tyler, how is that?
I can hear him.
Okay, hear him. Good. Try to talk as loud as you can since we're doing this in a little different way. But let's just give Matt a little intro here. Matt is currently pursuing a Bachelor's of Arts in Psychology at St. Leo University. He's a recent graduate with an associate degree from Pasco Hernando State College. And he's volunteered at his local emergency management office. He's an intern at How the Weather Works. He's been there for about over 5 years now. He's been heavily involved in the National Weather Camp program, which How the Weather Works does a lot with. And he's part of the National Weather Association. He's actually on a few committees promoting professional development and diversity, and he does a lot of work in there. So, Matt, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so I guess we can dive right into it. How did you kind of get your start in weather? What was kind of the thing that brought you into it, and what kind of drives your passion for weather?
That's a very good question. I don't know. I've always been interested in severe weather. Mesoscale forecasting, tropical meteorology, that's always been an interest, and that's been a large focus of my internship research. I've done a lot in education. I enjoy weather education, different things along those lines. For me personally, it started out, I guess, really as a fear of weather that I then channeled into an interest.
Gotcha. Huh. Well, that's cool. So I'm assuming the tropical stuff is your interest. Is that based on because you're from Florida, I presume, or you lived there for some time?
Being from Florida has been a large part of that. I think I remember going down once to the Hurricane Center, and it was like, oh, wow, you know, this is actually, you know, an entire office dedicated to hurricane forecasting. Having lived through several hurricanes, I mean, 2004, 2005, I experienced some of those storms firsthand, and, you know, I think that played a key role in my interest actually turning into an interest from a fear, because it started out, you know, every other day I'd ask my family, you know, is there going to be a tornado today? And yeah. That was regardless of the weather for the day. You know, it could be clear skies out, but it's, oh, is there going to be a tornado today? And that actually goes into some of the autism stuff I'm going to talk about tonight.
Yeah, so let's go right into that. I guess just kind of give us a brief introduction of what you're doing and why it's important.
Okay. So basically how I got started with the whole autism angle would be appropriate. Back in 2014, I was working at the weather camp. We had a student who's on the spectrum. And this student, of course, had a high interest in meteorology. And we didn't have any kind of idea how to basically handle the autism-related characteristics. I actually myself am on the spectrum, and therefore was able to recognize some of the different traits. Because I saw myself reflected. So we were able to handle that, you know, in an appropriate manner, and engage him in a way that he understood our, you know, our weather activities and different things that we did at the camp. But it was from that I really put my foot down on the issue and said, you know, I want to do something about this because it's not something that people think of. And as I went forward, I said, you know, we didn't have a plan. So is anybody else in the Weather Enterprise thinking of these issues? So that's basically how I approached it. Mm-hmm. And just anecdotal discussion with different professionals in the field would corroborate my finding and my hypothesis that, you know, nobody's thinking of it in the enterprise, even though they may be directly affected by it through their family members or someone else they may know who has autism.
Gotcha.
And I guess from there, I mean, it's just slowly ballooned. I'm on the National Weather Association's Diversity Committee, leading up the Subcommittee on Disabilities. And a big part of that is my interest in autism outreach and promoting acceptance for people on the spectrum. And it's not just myself. I mean, I've experienced a lot of the stereotypes and things firsthand, but it really goes beyond me. I really, for myself, it's irrelevant. I really am more concerned for the well-being of others and making changes for others. And I don't know, it's been a work in progress the past year or so as I get my feet wet and become more familiar with different theories and different research.
Gotcha. So, I guess explain some of those theories and why autism and meteorology and where the connection is there.
Okay. So basically, we have this thing called the empathizing systemizing theory. And empathizing systemizing theory was theorized by psychologist Simon Baron Cohen about a decade ago. And basically, what he noticed, now this is going back to the repetitive behaviors in autism. Systemizing, he theorized, is the process in which people with autism seek to identify patterns and rules. So you're basically establishing whether or not there are rules and patterns that exist. And within that, you're trying to, I guess, answer questions, basically. You know, you're asking, if I do this, then this happens. And so you have this if-then model that is predictable. And within that, of course, the individual is able to have some semblance of control. You know, it's something they can control. So a system is considered anything that receives an input and can produce a correlated output. So like flipping on a light switch, for example, that would be a system. Meteorology, of course, weather's a very nice natural system. There's a lot of different inputs, as you know, with correlated outputs. So basically, systemizing is finding rules and patterns and looking for those linkages. And that is where the interest in science comes from, because they're naturally inclined for this. You know, if you can trigger some implicit learning and get early exposure and through education as a meteorologist, then you can actually take this repetitive behavior, which may be negative in other contexts, and channel it into something that they might actually be interested in.
Okay.
Which would open up career path down the line that might otherwise not exist.
Okay, so I read some of the research that you've been doing, and I've, right off the bat, it's super interesting, and I sat down and started reading and didn't stop until after I was finished. And so I was curious. You mentioned how increasing this might be jumping the gun a little bit, but you mentioned how increasing clarity in meteorological forecasts and maybe even graphics and the message overall and communications would help people with autism kind of perceive that forecast, but also the general public. And I think for the general public aspect of it, you cannot not be more true about that. That's kind of the goal there. Are there any kind of general improvements, overarching improvements that you had in mind when you mentioned this in your paper?
Okay. So basically, there's not much that we're going to be able to do in terms of we can't expect, first and foremost, we can't expect people to change the way they deliver a forecast. Your broadcaster is not going to adjust just based on, one simple, seemingly simple need. But regardless of that, there are things we can do. So graphically, we have so much information. We're trying to squeeze so much information into our graphics. This isn't even talking, your weather models. This is talking, forecast information distributed to the public. It's just information overload. And the thing with autism, there's something called central coherence. And central coherence basically is the ability of the individual to take pieces of information and relate them to each other. So you're doing this globally, so across the big picture, and then you're doing this locally with different specific pieces. So it's local and global information processing. And when you provide them with so much information, there's the potential that the individual can be overwhelmed. So graphically, you want to be able to break down your information into smaller chunks that they can then locally process. A good example of this would be when I look at like upper air charts, for example. So I'm looking at upper air fronts and different model output. I can find the short waves really, really well. But I have trouble in the greater scheme of things relating those short waves to the bigger pattern. So I may see the shortwave digging down across the southeast, but I don't see upstream of that shortwave, which if anyone watching is not meteorologically inclined, a shortwave is basically a cold front. So I see the cold front, but I'm not necessarily able to always relate it to the larger pattern. That's just one example.
Okay.
But weak central coherence is actually, it's seen largely as a benefit. It's just basically a different cognitive style that is locally focused. So what we see with weak central coherence is a skill. This has been empirically proven in the literature, peer-reviewed, that individuals with autism are very, very good at local processing. So they can, they can look at small pieces and notice change. Weak central coherence is part of the attention to detail that presents in autism, much like systemizing. Both are associated with extreme attention to detail, and the difference is that weak central coherence holds that the individual, no matter how long they focus on the overall picture, is forever going to be lost in the details.
Okay, so
systemizing.
If you can finish up there, go finish up. I have a follow-up question after you're finished here.
Okay, so whereas systemizing would hold that given enough time, the individual would be able to internalize the information and eventually, potentially, master it.
Okay, so that such focus on detail, that that kind of part of it, where do you think that finds its strength the most in meteorology, whether it's forecasting or programming behind the scenes or making graphics? Is there a part where that strength can really be used to its full potential?
Okay, yes. Now it's going to depend on whether you're systemizing dominant or if you're central coherent dominant. So obviously if weak central coherence is stronger than the systemizing output you have inherently, then like such as with myself, you'll find that the individual isn't able, like within forecasting, they're not able to put all the pieces together. But if they're systemizing dominant, they can still have that attention to detail without the global processing inhibition. So if you're systemizing dominant, you will see that strength. They'll be very good at piecing together things. I guess I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. When you were describing that, I could see the difficulty there, but I also see that as you can really use those as strength, especially for weather forecasting when there is so much attention to detail and so many details that exist. So kind of on a different note here, you also mentioned how mentoring programs for individuals with autism are extremely important in meteorology. And I think that's kind of an important thing for all individuals in meteorology, especially when you're in high school or maybe if you're just kind of in undergrad and kind of getting the feel of things. How do you think we can ramp up these efforts for all individuals and specifically for individuals with autism?
I actually, I'm a mentor to the student I mentioned previously. And what I've noticed is that you really have to engage.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to obviously recognize the behavior. And then within that, you have to obviously accept it and be willing to work with them. But within that, you basically, it's engaging them, one-to-one. You want to get them interested as best you can. You try to pique their interest. Just trying to think of my own mentoring process here.
Yeah.
I found that social media, text messaging, that's all very effective. But you have to keep at it because within autism, there's this, I don't want to call it social inhibition or disinterest, but in reality, I mean, that's what it is. It's not having as much interest socially just because you don't understand it. I know me, I'm socially interested. I try to socialize. It can be difficult. But a lot of times, they're just not as interested. So you really have to be direct. And when you ask a question and they don't respond, you just have to keep at it. And not take it personally as a mentor. That's just one observation I've made. But it's difficult for, I think, the typical meteorologist who doesn't necessarily know all the traits. And that's what I'm trying to promote. I'm trying to promote awareness of the just different traits and characteristics. If the meteorologist is aware of systemizing, then, of course, they're going to be able to redirect that behavior. when I was at the weather camp, redirection, and I've seen this in other students as well, redirection is a major piece of the puzzle. You want to be able to focus their interest. So they may be interested, for example, you might have like a topic, you're talking about severe weather. But their interest may be in oceanography. You have to get them focused. And that's a big part of it. I hope that helps there.
Yeah, so Tyler has a question, actually. Tyler, go ahead.
Yes, I find this a fascinating conversation. Matt, I have a question for you. Would you say that there is a higher concentration of autistic individuals in the field of meteorology than
that's a fields? Good question.
Yeah, go ahead, Matt.
Is he okay? So yes. So the question was, would you say there is a higher concentration of autistic individuals in the field of meteorology than in other fields? Yes and no. And I say yes and no just because I've seen it, but it hasn't been empirically proven. It's hard for me to say one way or the other whether meteorology specifically, just because there's been no work. There's been no direct correlation scientifically for that. However, there was a study released in 2001 by Simon Baron Cohen that was following up on his systemizing theory. And basically, he was testing, he developed this questionnaire called the autism quotient. And he looked at different groups of students. He was testing for autistic traits. The autism quotient is a clinical pre-screening tool for autism. So with this test, he looked at three or four different groups of students across science, social science, and humanities programs at Cambridge University in England. He found a positive correlation between not necessarily autism, because he wasn't specifically looking at diagnosed individuals, but characteristics. So he found that the individuals who were enrolled in the science programs, science, social science, had higher autistic traits than those who were enrolled in the humanities. And the social science students, actually, hold on, let me double check. Yes, that's correct. Science scored higher than social science and humanities, whether they were confirmed to be on the spectrum or not. So he found that correlation, and that was based on another study that he had performed that found that parents of children who were engineers, he actually found a link between children whose parents were in scientific fields and being on the spectrum. And, of course, there was a sort of mating process that predisposed them, basically, for the conditions. So that's where it comes from.
So if you're unfamiliar with some of this work here, please check it out, because it's very, very interesting. And Matt, are you doing more of this research right now with your in your bachelor's degree in psychology, or are you building on that?
That is where I'm heading.
Okay.
I'd like to do some different autism related studies to build on some of these things. Whether literacy within an autism population could be interesting. I'd like to establish that. Different things like that that I'd like to do.
Yeah, and you mentioned color blindness as well, because I think that's something that goes a little overlooked in the weather community.
Right, I've been looking at color blindness as well. Gotcha. I mean, we've had more and more discussion on the Weather Service's implementation of colors, media implementation of colors. It's just not consistent. And that's hurtful across the board, but especially for the colorblind individual. That's another topic, though.
Yeah, absolutely. So really looking forward to that work. We have this question that we ask everyone on the show kind of near the end. And what has been the most important skill in your career thus far, and is there any advice that you would give to meteorologists that are kind of just joining the game or in high school and interested in weather? Any advice you have for them?
Well, the stereotypical thing for me to say would be to stand out and be different, and always push yourself. And I would further that and say that you want to be yourself, be unique. You know, you've got this interest, and you're not the only one that has it. So do those things that make you stand out. You know, if you're at a conference, go the extra mile to introduce yourself, even if you're uncomfortable, even if, you know, even if you don't have a business card, just walk up to the individual and introduce yourself, because you don't know who they are, or more importantly, who they know. And I've found it's not even necessarily who I know, but the people I know and their network. It's who they can put me in contact with. That's been just as beneficial as having my own contact. It's foraging good relationships, professional relationships, and you know, being willing to leverage your contacts for others as well is a good thing. And always, you want to stay humble. I'd say that's very important.
Yeah, I love that advice. We actually haven't gotten any of that on the show yet. So, as you said, be unique and be yourself, and I think you were exactly that tonight. Thank you, Matt, for joining us, and we'll have you on again sometime soon.
Okay, great.
All right, thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
And we thank Matt for coming on to this evening's show. A very interesting discussion. It's one that you don't hear very much about. I don't know many people having the discussion that we just had.
Yeah, no, me neither. You know, it's something to me that was pretty brand new. I had heard kind of small discussions about it. But I don't know, maybe it's something that goes kind of untalked about in our particular circles. But it's certainly interesting and certainly very important for our field, especially as we continue to advance and become more diverse of a community.
And we are still working on the website. I know that question is headed my way, but
What's the time frame there, Tyler?
Time frame. There is no set time frame. But the foundation is poured. At your request, it needs some polishing up, and hopefully we'll have that within a few weeks, and we'll be able to release the URL.
Oh, that's music to my ears. I wanted to mention a project that I've been working on, brand new project. It's going to be kind of a side project of the Weather Junkies, and it's called Weather Ready or Not. And basically, I'm going to be looking at certain weather events, generally extreme weather events, and interviewing people who were impacted by that event and getting their perception of the forecast, of the weather, and how that all played into their decision-making. It's something that's very interesting to me. And hopefully I can make it interesting for you as well. And they're probably going to be monthly shows. I guess they're not. It's not a show. It's more of just an episode. And it'll be pretty short, looking around 30 minutes. So if you like that, please let me know. I would love some feedback on the first episode. You can check out the first episode on the Weather Junkies iTunes and the SoundCloud and, you know, anywhere else it's on, except for YouTube. I'm not uploading it to YouTube. So please let me know what you think. I would love to start a discussion around the first episode. I explored the supercell that went through D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. And I touched on some things, including broadcast meteorology and the importance of that skill set. I talked about weather apps and the deficiency that they have right now in forecasting. And so I would love to know what you think. And I'll be making some more of those in the future as well. But that's going to do it for us tonight. Thank you for listening. Sorry about a few of the technical glitches we had tonight, but hopefully we overcame them adequately. If you're not following us on Twitter, check us out at the WX Junkies. We're also on Facebook. You can listen to us on SoundCloud, YouTube, iTunes, and Stitcher. Tyler, sign us off.
Well, we thank you for joining us this evening, and we'll be right back here next Thursday evening live at 8 o'clock. We will announce the guest on social media as we get closer to next week's show, and that's when we hope you'll join us right back here. But for Matt, Dakota, and myself, thanks for listening. We'll see you right back here next week.
Julia, we got cows.